Well, while we're waiting for Dale Schisler, why don't some of you on the phone, or all of you that are on the phone, why don't you introduce yourselves? We have about 35 doctors on this call tonight that are signed up for it. So if we could go ahead and have you introduce yourselves, maybe what you want to get out of tonight's call, that would help me. And we will proceed.
Well, I guess I'll go first. Hi, my name is Evelyn Teague, and I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And I've called in a couple of times on some of these calls before, and I always thoroughly enjoy them. So got an email and wanted to just kind of listen in and get some more pointers.
Bill, it's Peter Munton here. One of my doctors in California is very interested in hearing about how to minimize staffing.
Okay.
How you reduce down to a reasonable level, and does that involve eliminating a front desk person?
Don Swerber in West Lafayette, Indiana.
Okay. And what would you like me to cover tonight, Don?
My big problem is that we have cut our staff down. We have four people on staff now. We followed some of your principles, certainly not enough of them yet. We went from total chaos down to still over capacity. We don't have as many patients. So I really would like them to cover how he motivates his staff, how they do their internal marketing, and how they keep the patient flow going.
Okay, very good. So motivating the staff, okay, very good. One of the things that happens, of course, is when people cut down the staff, you have to have the right systems in place. Otherwise, you just go from chaos to more chaos. So we'll talk about that. Very good. Anyone else?
Hi, Bill. This is Bill Papadopoulos from Boston.
Yes, I know you.
How are you going?
Excellent. How's your new office? I see on the front page of the Dental Economics.
Yeah, things are going well.
What would you like me to cover tonight?
Well, I'm just chiming in to hear what's new and hear what's going.
Very good. Okay. Anybody else want to introduce themselves and make a request here?
Hi, Bill. It's Rosamina.
Yes. How are you?
De La Rosa. Good.
Yes.
I'm from New Jersey. We've spoken before. I'm looking forward to hearing what your input's about thriving in this economy.
Okay. All right. So the economy.
You bet I'll talk about. Okay.
You bet.
Looking forward to a few weeks.
Okay, yes. Rosamina has just joined us as a client. And let's just kind of take it from the start. Let's talk about how do you create a team? And one of the things that Dale did in his practice is he had a large practice. He's in a suburb of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Dale is a mature dentist. He's in his 60s. He's been practicing a long time. He's had a lot of different, or several different consultants in his practice. And he had gone the route of bigger and bigger and bigger, had at least one or two full-time associates, a staff of close to 20, and he's now working by himself. Well, I take that back. He has a part-time associate, and he has a staff of about a third what he had, and he's actually doing more dentistry now than he was then. And so how do you do that? And this is something that we've been, I think, very successful at, and it's helped a lot of doctors reduce their staff. And if you've got paper and pencil, and if you're taking notes, I'd like you to draw basically what would look like an Excel spreadsheet. And we're going to put some topics, expenditure topics, on the left-hand column. I'm going to have you put in the second column, that would be expenditures would be in column A. The amount you spend as a percentage, we're going to put in column B, we're going to put what the national average is. I'm going to put down in column C what we recommend and we've proven we can operate practices at. And then you can put down your own numbers, what your numbers are in these categories, and you will start to see, as we get into this, where I'm going. But if we start out with this little Excel spreadsheet and look at the profitability of the dental practice, the number one item and the most expensive item in every practice is staff members. It's team. It's everything that we pay, and that includes salary, payroll costs, which include medical insurance, matching workman's compensation, matching Social Security, et cetera. Everything it costs, if there's a pension plan involved, it's all included. Now, you can put down for a national average, and I'm talking general dentist, solo practitioners, and for the same thing with, we'll talk general practitioners here to start with tonight. That's what most of you are. Bill Papadopoulos on the call happens to be a prosthodontist, but for the most of us, we're... Actually, you're not the prosthodontist. I'm thinking of somebody else, Bill. Sorry. You're a general dentist as well. All right, so now, the next item is laboratory, and laboratory national average runs between 8 and 9%. These are percentages of your gross. The next item will be dental supplies, and that's about 5%. The next item we'll put down is equipment. Equipment generally runs 3 to 5%. Rent runs 3 to 5%. Now we have miscellaneous. And miscellaneous, we'll call it X, because that's going to include everything else. That's your CE, your insurance, utilities, postage, everything else in your practice. We'll just put down as miscellaneous. Those are a whole bunch of little items. We'll lump them all together. And the national average runs around 74%, national average for overhead. So now, so you look at those numbers, and those are numbers that I believe that every owner of a dental practice should know. As a matter of fact, every owner of a business should know those numbers, those key numbers that you spend every month, and you need to know what those numbers are, because you're going to make a huge impact on your profitability. Now, the question came up is, how does a doctor minimize staff? Now, if you'll go to the next column over, I'm going to tell you what we recommend. We recommend, and if you've read our book, Playing Your A-Game, every one of those doctors, there are 23 of them in there, every one of them operate their practice between 14 and 20% for staff. And that includes everything. That includes hygiene, dental assistants, administrative staff, and all of those expenses we talked about. And we operate those between 14 and 20%. Now, you can take a look at what yours is and make those comparisons. But you can see there's one item right there. Now, if you're doing $1 million a year and you're at 30% for staff, you're spending $300,000. If you're spending 20% for staff on that same $1 million practice, you're spending $200,000. So that means we move $100,000 from the expenditure column down to the bottom line. That means that's $100,000 extra that comes home or pays off debt or does whatever. But anyway, it goes to a benefit for the doctor. Huge item. We take a look at lab next. Now, typical laboratory bill in most practices runs between 8 and 9%. Now, that's a number that I think everyone should know, and I believe even the staff, by the way, should know all these numbers as well. But if you're between 8 and 9%, there's something we know about your practice. We know that your communication skills, as it regards to selling dentistry to patients, and you'll hear me use the word selling dentistry, but that's exactly right. We're showing the patients our skill level at showing the patients the value for dental care are average. And that's what we see most of the time. That's how we get averages. Now, we would like to see 10, 11, or 12% for lab. And you can do some math on this one when you go back to your office and sit down. If you're at 8% for lab, and if you're at $1 million production again, you're spending $80,000 on laboratory for the year. And let's say we raise that to, well, let's make it real simple. Let's raise it to 12% of $1 million. That means your lab bill is $120,000. That's an extra $40,000 in lab. Divide that by your unit cost, your laboratory, and that's that many additional units of Crown and Bridge. Now, the question is, what happens to profit level on that many additional units of Crown and Bridge? And you can do the math on that, and you can see exactly what that costs. And so you can play with that one. Now, if you take a look at the other items, you go to dental supplies at 5 to 6%. And this is where so many dentists waste so much time and energy trying to cut their dental supplies by a point or two, which is about all you can do. I mean, you can become the most efficient purchasing agent in the country for purchasing dental supplies. And if you save 20%, you only save 1%, you see. And yet you're spending an extra 10% on staff. And what I find is so many dentists, and I've been saying this for years, if we could spend as much energy on putting systems in our office so that we could operate with a smaller staff, we can make some money. But instead, we're overstaffed, and we pore over all the catalogs and the websites trying to find the cheapest gloves or the cheapest impression materials or whatever, and we might save a percent. So that's a fallacy right there that we need to take a look at. Now, equipment payment runs between 3 and 5% of your gross, and if you happen to be in a position where you've paid for all of that and it's free and clear, remember that's still a cost. There's still an expense there because you own it personally and the practice should be paying you for it in one way. But it's an expense, or you're putting money through depreciation into a fund to buy new equipment. The same for rent. Interesting thing is you can't really change those two items. Now, miscellaneous, again, is such a small item that it's not really very important. And the other part of miscellaneous expenses is most of them you can't do anything about. You can't change your insurance payments. You can't change your utility bills. You can't change your phone bill. You can't change it. You see, these are categories of things that you really can't change. Now, we would like to see practice operate, and most of our clients do. They will operate between 45 and 55%. Now, if you go back to this spreadsheet and look at it again, where do we make our big change? We make a big change in staff. Now, that leads us into the next question here. How do minimize staff? How do you cut down? Well, first off, you have to have some incentives in place for the staff. Now, I'm going to go through our bonus plan. Any of you that are on this call tonight, when one of our representatives calls you, all you have to do is say that you would like to receive a copy of our bonus plan. We'll be happy to send it to you. It's actually a plan that another consultant and myself worked out a number of years ago, and we've taught this to literally thousands of offices all over the country, and it works, and it's fair. And the bonus plan works like this. First off, we make some assumptions that we're willing to operate the practice, and again, we choose a percentage between 14 and 20% based on, you know, the type of practice. If you're a high-end prosto practice or a high-end cosmetic practice doing mostly large cases, you can work with a smaller staff. If you're a pedodontist, we have a pedodontist in Indianapolis, and she sees so many patients a day that she needs a huge staff. But remember, she has no lab bill, whereas the prosthodontist or the high-end cosmetic practice has a small staff but they have a very large lab bill. So you take the two of those together and kind of average them out. So let's take a look, and let's use 20% for tonight's discussion. If we choose 20%, we simply take the first thing we do is we add up the total salaries of all the people involved, everyone except the doctor. So we take the dental assistant, the hygienist, and the administrative people. Now, let's just, for purposes of illustration here, let's do a little example. If we have a hygienist making $4,000 a month, and we have a receptionist making $3,000, and we have a dental assistant making $3,000 a month, and I'm not saying these are salaries you should be paying, I'm just using, they're just to make the numbers come out nicely. That's $10,000 total. Now, we need to add about 15% for payroll cost on top of that. So we'd add another $1,500. So our total payroll in this case is $11,500. Now, if we're going to keep salaries at 20%, what we have to do is we multiply that number by 5, and that's what we come up with. So 5 times 11 is 55, and 25 more is 57.5 every month, and that's what we call BAM. So $57,500 is BAM, bare-ass minimum. So then what we do, we take the combination of production and collection, and by the way, if you're doing anything with PPOs where you're taking a discounted fee for a service, that discounted fee is the production figure we're going to use, and you'll see why, because we're going to average the production and the collection together. And if you're charging, let's say you're charging, your fee is $1,200 for a crown, but you belong to a PPO that only pays $9, and you count $1,200 towards your production, but really, you know you're only going to collect $900, you're paying bonus an extra $300. We don't want to do that. So your real production on that case is $900, not $1,200. So we take the production collection figure, add them together, and divide by 2. And let's just say that we did $67,500 this month, the average. We're $10,000 over BAM, and the staff gets 20% of the extra, or in this case, $2,000. Now, let's take this same office. We have 3 staff people working there. Let's crank this thing up a little bit. Let's learn some verbal skills. Let's become more efficient. Let's do $87,000 a month. Now, $87,000 a month, we're $30,000 over BAM, which means they get 20% of that, or $6,000, and that is divided by three, and they get $2,000 extra per each one. So now we've taken that hygienist who made $4,000, she gets six. That dental assistant who was making three gets five, and that receptionist who's making three gets $5,000. Now, let's say that they, not understanding this bonus system, they decide they want an extra person. So we bring in an additional dental assistant or an additional person at the front desk, another $3,000, and what do we do with BAM? Well, what we did with BAM is, we remember, it's five times those salaries, so we just raised salaries $15,000, BAM, $15,000. So how much of their bonus goes away? And they're getting a total here, in this case, of $6,000 bonus money. What happens when they bring in that fourth person? Anybody quick with the math, hit your star button, star six, and tell me the answer.
It goes from $2,000 to $1,500.
Excellent. So what happens is each person's bonus of $2,000 drops to $1,000, doesn't it? Because that last $3,000 of salary comes out of that same 20% pool that we had for staff, except instead of getting $2,000 apiece bonus, they get $1,000 apiece. Now, that provides the incentive right there to see if we can figure out how to do this with three people. The interesting thing is, we have done this in several hundred offices, and when the staff gets it, all of a sudden, instead of, you know, the solution to every problem is hire more help, instead of having a solution to hire more help, they say, hey, maybe we can figure out a way to do this on our own. Because you see, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, the easy solution to being a little bit overworked is hire more people. As a matter of fact, I don't know how many of you are following the Boeing machinist strike. Boeing machinist strike started the first of this week. You've got, I don't know how many, 125,000 people or something out on strike at Boeing. And one of the things they want is, back about 1990, Boeing was losing money, and Boeing streamlined and became more efficient and reduced the number of people working there. Well, the thing all these machinists want is they want more help. We're working too hard. Well, if Boeing hires more help, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 apiece. I had five people in my front office. I had 16 total employees, and they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have two seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have three people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with three people. But you see, she's got three people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach. And some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this. And some are just getting ready to do it. But we have computers in all the treatment rooms. But what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had 5 people in my front office. I had 16 total employees. And they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have 2 seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have 3 people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with 3 people. But you see, she's got 3 people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. Some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach. And some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this. And some are just getting ready to do it. But we have computers in all the treatment rooms. But what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had 5 people in my front office. I had 16 total employees. And they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have two seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have three people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with three people. But you see, she's got three people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. Some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach. And some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this. And some are just getting ready to do it. But we have computers in all the treatment rooms. But what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had five people in my front office. I had 16 total employees, and they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have two seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have three people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with three people. But you see, she's got three people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. Some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach, and some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this, and some are just getting ready to do it. But we have computers in all the treatment rooms, but what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had 5 people in my front office. I had 16 total employees. And they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have 2 seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have 3 people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with 3 people. But you see, she's got 3 people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. Some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach, and some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this, and some are just getting ready to do it, but we have computers in all the treatment rooms, but what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had 5 people in my front office. I had 16 total employees. And they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money. And I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, you know, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have two seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have three people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with three people. But you see, she's got three people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. Some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach. And some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this. And some are just getting ready to do it. But we have computers in all the treatment rooms. But what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had five people in my front office. I had 16 total employees. And they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex, and we created jobs for people. You'd think I'd have been working for government as my model. But as long as they're spending their money, they will want a bigger staff. But once they get it, that this 20% is theirs, now they're going to figure out some pretty efficient systems. For example, you know, I'm having dinner next week with an office who's in our book, April Zigley's office up in Seattle. We're having a dynamo in Portland, which is our people that do our coaching program. We have two seminars a year, and this is one of them. And April's been a client for years, and she always comes to a seminar every year, and she brings her team. They have three people, and they do $1.6 million. As a matter of fact, this year they may break $2 million. Last time I talked to her, they were on track to do $2 million this year with three people. But you see, she's got three people there who are trying to figure out ways to do this. For example, in their hygiene department, in their hygiene room, number one, they have titrated their hygiene department down to what they actually have demand for. Some of you have heard me talk about the theory of capacity versus demand. And most dental offices have more capacity than they have demand for. And the approach in most offices and from most practice management people is, well, let's spend a few $100,000 on marketing and let's increase the demand. And that's a good point. There's a place for that. But in the hygiene department, generally, that's not where they come in anyway. So what we have is more capacity than demand. So her hygiene department is titrated down to where hygiene is bursting at the seams. But here's another step that we teach, and some of you on the call are clients of ours and are doing this, and some are just getting ready to do it, but we have computers in all the treatment rooms, but what I find is in most offices, the computers are being used to about 20% of their capacity. And I recently heard Lauren Levine, who has a column in Dental Economics on high tech, I heard him speak about a week ago, and he said most computers, they have a certain amount of money to spend on salaries, and either it's going to come out of the profits Boeing makes, or people are going to make lower salaries, one or the other. Well, I doubt if the machinists are asking for lower salaries, so it's going to come out of Boeing's profit. And by the way, Boeing has been quite profitable the last few years, so maybe they can do it. I don't know. But in a dental office, as long as they're spending the doctor's money, let's hire more help. Now, I developed this plan at a time when I was doing right at $1 million back in the mid-80s. Remember, in those days, crowns were $300 a piece. I had five people in my front office. I had 16 total employees. And they were crying for more help. Well, of course they were. They were spending my money. And the more help they had, all I did was pay out more money, and I had more people to manage, more people to keep happy, and all of that stuff. And the systems got more complex and more complex. And I very often get a chance to look at doctors who aren't very profitable. And I look at doctors that aren't very profitable, and I generally find there's no vision whatsoever. I generally find them grasping at straws, trying to try this system, that system, and hoping somehow they can put this puzzle together. But the problem is, it's almost like putting a jigsaw puzzle together from the back. In other words, I'm putting the pieces together, but I don't have a picture of what it's going to look like when it's complete. And I see doctors struggling with this, and they go to seminar after seminar, or they listen to consultants. We've taken clients on that have had several consultants, and they've tried various systems. But again, if you can visualize a jigsaw puzzle made out of cardboard, and in the front of it, you've got this beautiful photograph. That's the vision. And the back of the puzzle is just plain cardboard. And we're trying to put this puzzle together. Nobody has a clue what the picture is going to look like when it's over. And you tend to get about the same amount of excitement from the doctor and the team when putting all these systems together because they don't know where they're going. So it starts with vision. It starts with vision. And once you have that in place, then these systems all start to make sense and everybody starts to understand them. And as a matter of fact, we found in many of our offices, the staff members, the team members, have come up with improvements on the systems that we teach, and we learn things every month. And so, Bill Papadopoulos, you ask what's new. Well, we've learned a lot new in the last 6 months. We learn stuff every year, and we learn a lot from our clients. We learn a lot from other sources as well, but that's one of the things. I don't know if that answers your question, Don, but yeah, you've got to have people that want the same thing you want, or it'll never work. And I don't care about skill level. I care about attitude, because if the attitude is good, we can teach them anything. And for heaven's sake, they taught us how to do dentistry. That's because we wanted to learn. And if others, if the attitude's bad, you can't teach them anything. Good question. Other people, star six, and a question to any of us. Well, if there are no other questions, I'd like to conclude this call by saying thank you, number one, for being on the call. And I apologize for not having Dale on here. I'm sure you would have loved to hear him talk about what he's done in his practice. And my biggest concern is I hope something didn't happen to Dale tonight. I hope everything's all right. And secondly, one of our representatives will give you a call. And if any of you want our bonus system, we can give you. We've got a little Excel spreadsheet. You can just figure it out and plug it in. And one of the things that most of you will find, and I'm going to caution you, when you work out your BAM and you're not hitting BAM, then what you've got to do is you've got two choices. One is raise your income to hit BAM, or secondly, reduce the size of the BAM, which is by reducing the size of the staff. Now, I'm going to caution you, don't try to reduce the number of staff people unless you substitute an effective system in there that will allow you to work with less people. Don't just try to reduce the size of the staff without the effective systems in place. And secondly, remember, if you just hit BAM, there's still no bonus. That's just the break-even point. That's just BAM. That's just the break-even. That's where we're starting to, you've got your overhead down to where it's roughly 60%. 55 or 60%, but there's no bonus for the team, which means there's no incentive. And so if BAM is way up there above what you're doing, and if you're at 30%, for example, you've got to raise your production 50% to hit BAM. And trying to get a team to raise production 50% just to break even, first off, there's no incentive. Secondly, they're already knowing, they're already doing everything they know how to do. And if they're not doing everything you know how to do, you should have fired them a long time ago. If they're sandbagging or you're sandbagging, you could have done more. In other words, it's very difficult because everybody is doing what they already know how to do. Or you wouldn't go to work if you say, well, gee, I know I could do that, but I don't do it. I choose not to do that. No, that's not the case. You're all producing at a level. So here's an illustration. Why is it if I talk to a doctor and a staff doing $500,000 a year, and they've been at that level for a number of years, they're maxed out. They look at a doctor doing $1 million and say there's no way possible. And that doctor doing $1 million says they're maxed out, they couldn't do any more, and they look at somebody doing $1.5 million and they say there's no way. And then they learn a few things, and then pretty soon they start saying, hey, we could do that. And pretty soon the $500,000 practice is doing $1 million. Now, I talked to two doctors today that in the last 12 months have doubled their net income. And both of those doctors have been practicing over 20 years. And in the last year, and the reason I found this out is they both of them, one's in California, one's in Kansas, and both of them had conversations with their accountants recently, and their accountant said, what did you do? You've doubled your net income this year. And one of them was making almost $500,000 a year ago, and we last in 07 made almost $500,000. This year is going to make right at $1 million net. And the one in Kansas went from about $150,000 to well over $300,000. He went up by $200,000. He went to $350,000. And part of that is the systems they've put in place. They've got their numbers under control. They're both under 20% for staff, and it's staff's bonusing. So you can't just do a little bit. So when one of our reps calls you, at least have the courtesy to return the call or take the call and either say, yeah, I'm interested in more information, or I'm not interested. Either way, we respect that, and we leave you alone. But if you want interesting help on that bonus plan, just ask them for that, and they'll help you with that. It really works well. So unless there's any other comment or question, yes, go ahead.
Yes, this is Dave Bonadeo in Michigan.
Yes.
You may or may not know, but I think that in Michigan we're in a true recession. And when you take a look at restaurants, the restaurateurs are all complaining about the reduction in clientele. We have a tremendously high foreclosure rate. We have for lease signs on all the buildings around and so forth. And my question to you is, what is your advice in terms of the most effective medium in this type of market for marketing, bringing in new patients?
Well, here's an interesting thing. What town in Michigan are you in?
Pardon me?
What town in Michigan are you in?
Oh, I have two practices. One is in a very affluent town, Birmingham,
mm-hmm.
and then I have a blue-collar practice near Flint.
Yes, familiar with both of those.
Both ends of the spectrum.
Yes. Your Birmingham practice is very similar to a practice I have in Bloomfield Hills, demographically. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
That doctor is having a record year in Bloomfield Hills. I have a doctor in Detroit who's having a record year. He's right in the middle of it. He's right in the middle of the blue-collar area. I've got clients in Battleground. I've got clients in Kalamazoo, et cetera, who are doing well. Right in Detroit, you are hit. But, you know, here's one thing I want you to think about. In 1980, you had a 21% unemployment rate in Michigan. Remember that?
Yes.
21%. What is it today?
7 or 8, I think.
That's right. It's about a third of what it was in 1980. The reason I remember that is because Oregon at that time, where I practiced, had an 18% unemployment rate, and we were second to you folks. You built cars, or in 1980 you weren't building cars, and we were cutting timber, but interest rates went to 20% plus on mortgages, and people in California quit building houses, and we quit cutting trees. 18% unemployment. At a 7 or 8% unemployment rate, how many people are still working?
Well, quite a few.
92%. So your marketing is you want to appeal to those 92%. The other thing that you want to do, and this sounds I mean, I want you to really hear what I'm saying, because, yes, restaurateurs are complaining. They're always complaining. Restaurants are the biggest, I mean, you know, what's the average lifespan of a restaurant in the United States, historically?
5 years, maybe?
No, under 12 months. The average lifespan of a restaurant is under 12 months. And here's the silly thing that restaurant owners do. A restaurant goes broke in this location, and somebody else says, hey, I can make it go in that same location. And they move in, and they go broke. Now, you can check these statistics with the phone companies. That's where I got the statistics in the first place. And the reason that's why they charge business lines a large deposit to put a phone in, because they know the average small business in this country will be broke in 12 months. And restaurants are is one of the very volatile parts. Yes, Detroit is suffering. Yes, for the high cost of fuel, they're not building trucks. They're not building big cars. They're not. And yeah, that's right. But you still have 92% of the people that are working.
I think that to a certain extent, you know, you're right about the recession being based through the media, TV, newspapers, and so forth. And people, I think, in general, have the mentality that they're cutting back their spending, at least until the election's over.
Right. And I think that's true. And see, they have to do this. Every 8 years, they do this. You can follow this. Every 8 years, we do it. We do it a little bit at the midterm elections as well. But the presidential election, every president inherits a recession. And that's because there's a whole theory out there. You get me going in politics here, but I'll be careful. We have to create a state of fear in the populace. And we have to have a state of fear so the government has something to protect us from. There's always a crisis, you see. Right now, the crisis is the economy. Do you remember when Bill Clinton beat George Bush 41? What was the mantra that Bill Clinton used?
It's the economy, stupid.
It's the economy, stupid. All right. George W. took over from Bill Clinton. He had a recession on his hands. Same thing. And then the 90s took off and, you know, the whole... But anyway, you know, it's a cycle. And so they create this. But here's the question to ask your patients. First off, you can start with your team. Ask yourself, are you still working? The answer is yes. So how's the recession affecting you? Well, my stock portfolio is worth less. Yeah, but I'm not cashing it out, so it doesn't matter. My house is worth less today than it was a year ago, but I'm not selling my house, so it really doesn't matter, does it? Ask your patients, how's the recession affecting you? I remember in 1980 when we had that 18% unemployment rate, and patients would come into my office and say, gosh, I just can't really do anything right now. You know, we've got this recession and everything. And remember, I practiced in a college town. My clients all were state employees. I'd say, well, how's this recession affecting you? Oh, it's the high price of gasoline or whatever. I said, well, you're still working, aren't you? Yeah. Any decrease in pay? No. Well, how's it affecting you? I guess it really isn't. So you've got to go in there, and I can tell you, I can't use names tonight because I don't have their permission, but I can tell you my Michigan clients are doing really well because they're not buying into the recession. Number one thing, quit reading the newspaper. Quit watching the news. I was on my boat all summer and didn't watch the news, didn't read a newspaper except about once a week. And you know what? Life went on, and I did just fine. And I didn't know how bad the world was till I got home in September and started reading the newspaper again, started listening to these people on television. And my gosh, you get up now and you got to check and make sure the sun's going to come up today. It's so bad out there.
What do you think is the most effective way in this type of economy and market to bring in new clientele?
Number one is internal, asking for referrals.
Which we do.
Getting out in the community and networking. Michael at Rocket Dog puts together identity packages for doctors and, you know, letterheads and cards and puts a whole package together. But you get out and network. Get out and do some presentations, the local Rotary Club, the local health fairs. You know, get out and talk to people. Get your team out there talking to people and start asking for referrals. That's the most effective. It still beats any kind of... And you need to do media today, too. And the number one media thing is websites. And you need a website. Dramatically, you need websites. And today, you need to be on these social networking blogs, because that's where people are making decisions today. The biggest thing is get out there and don't be the invisible dentist. You know, I tease dentists all the time. If they get up and the morning and leave their home in their camouflage outfits under the cover of darkness, sneak in the back door of their office, do dentistry 4 hours, eat their lunch in the back room, and put on their camos again and sneak out of, under the cover of darkness. And they're the invisible dentist. Nobody knows them. That's still the most effective marketing. You know what else is nice about it? It doesn't cost anything.
Say again? Oh, it doesn't cost. You're right.
It doesn't cost anything. You know, when's the last time you took a patient to lunch?
Oh, I do that frequently for patients that are existing patients.
Well, next time you take them to lunch, say, okay, do you get the check or you send me a referral?
Touché.
I have a quick comment. This is Evelyn Teague in Birmingham. And
yes.
Birmingham, Alabama, that is. And I have a relatively new practice. I've been open almost 4 years now, and I have a small team, and I started out with a consultant, and the practice is really growing by leaps and bounds now, and I want to keep it small because I know that's the smartest thing to do is to be efficient and not have a large team. And it's tempting, though, because the practice is growing so much to add, you know, extra help, and we're constantly drilling on systems and things of that sort. So it's
that's
very
what we do in dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
Drill. It's teasing.
No pun intended, right? So, but I would really like to have a representative maybe call just to talk a little bit more. I've been looking into your.
Sharon will call you. I don't know what you're producing. I don't want you to say tonight on the call, but we can do, you know, we have clients doing clear up to right at $2 million with three people.
Yeah.
And I find most people are saying you're way too lean. You've got to hire more staff than that.
Yeah, and that's what I have now. I have three. Mm-hmm. And we've actually listened to your CD on the recession-proofing your office.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something to that extent, and we're doing the things that you're suggesting. And I like for the team to hear things like that so they can be inspired and know, okay, we can do so much more than what we're doing
now. Birmingham market, I have a client there.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Okay, we'll call you. Anybody else, any other comments? Did that doctor from Michigan, have you ever heard our tape on recession-proofing your practice?
No, I haven't.
I'll have somebody call you and make sure you get a copy. That's a CD I did a few months ago when you could see what was going on. You could kind of see what was starting to happen, and I did a CD on recession-proofing your practice. I'll make sure. Carol Bogner is the one that works in that area, and she'll call you, and we'll make sure we get you a copy of that.
Okay. Hey, Bill, this is Michael over at Rocket Dog.
Yes.
Just a quick comment on how to get new patients, especially in a perceived down economy and things like that. The ability is people love stuff. And so when you're asking for referrals, think about rewarding for those referrals.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So just something that's a little out of the norm. And whether that is finding out what that person really loves to do or eat or go someplace, that is a huge benefit to you in the long run. So, there's little things that you can do to help pay big dividends.
Yeah, football tickets, theater tickets, restaurant, gift certificates, anything like that works really well.
Bill?
Yes.
It's Michigan again here. I have had promotions that I've posted at both of my practices right at the check counter where no one can miss them.
Mm-hmm.
I have an excess of bonus airline miles.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an offer to give two free airline tickets to virtually anywhere in the world.
Wow.
In both practices, I have had yet to have one person ask about that.
You know what? I'm going to tell you.
We tried also gasoline for referrals. Have
mm-hmm.
yet to have a single person ask about that. And,
I'm going to make a suggestion.
So, yes.
It's nice to have it up there at the front desk, but nobody's talking about it.
Well, I'm talking about it. And
but your
team I will say that to various patients, and yet I don't get any response for some reason.
Want to ask those patients, why not?
Yeah.
Why aren't you referring to me? And you might want to call somebody, or you might want to have somebody like Rocket Dog or one of our consultants just do a little blind study for you and find out why people aren't referring to you.
By asking them directly.
Well, you create a questionnaire with a lot of questions on it, and then, you know, they don't even know they're talking about you. We're just doing a survey for the Michigan Dental Society, and we're just some questions, and they fill it out, and there's a reward for filling it out, and we usually do it online, and you know, one of the questions is, do you refer your friends and neighbors to your existing dentist? And if so, why do you? And if not, why not? And they don't even know it's you that's doing the survey, and you find out.
Yeah, and I may want to talk to you at some point about a situation I ran into. In Flint, I bought this practice 2.5 years ago, and the hygienist who had been here for 4 years went to work part-time 5 miles away. She stole my patient list and started calling these patients over to the other practice.
Well, let's leave that for a one-on-one call.
We'll
talk about it. Carol will help you set up a call. We'll talk about that.
I'd love to.
I'm familiar with Flint. I've got a client in Flint. Okay, go ahead. Anybody else?
One more question, Bill. That Rocket Dog, is that rocketdog.com or?
It's rocketdogdental.com.
Oh, Rocket Dog Dental. Thanks, Mike. Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone, for being on this call. Even without Dale, I think we did well. I hope you all got what you came for, and I apologize again for not having Dale on here. He's a very interesting guy, and I just hope that nothing happened to him. So, thank you very much.
Bill,
have a good night. Yes.
Thank you.
Bill, can I a quick question?
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
We missed a lot of this talk tonight because the reception was so bad. Can we get a copy of this tape, or a tape of this?
The whole thing was taped. Yeah, you'll all get a copy of the CD.
What is the doctor's name, Bill?
Yeah, who was that?
Don Swoberl.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
You can also preview these calls on the website a couple days after the fact as well.
Yes, it'll be on the website in just a few days. You can go on there and preview it.
All right.
Review it. Excellent. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.